What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm King Kaz, that is JVZ, and we are here to talk about some sports news. What's going on, Vs?
It's only been like less than a week since our last episode, but a lot has happened, and I think we'll be missing next week, so...
Next week will be TwitchCon. So for some reason, if you listen to this and you're out in San Diego, California for TwitchCon and you see JVZ, say hello, because me and DGM unfortunately will not be there. But yeah, don't be shy. Say hello.
Yeah. So as far as the sports news goes, let's get to the roundup. The NHL preseason has started.
Hell yeah.
Major League Baseball season is winding down.
Have you been looking at any teams this year for NHL, or is it still kind of a pipe dream for us to follow the NHL?
Well, I mean, I follow the Sharks, so follow Twitter stuff, and so I see them doing preseason. I've actually just been really looking forward to the NWHL season on Twitch this year, just since that news came out. I know that's starting early October, so I've been more excited about that. I know the NHL is always going to be there, and I know I'm probably not going to care until the playoffs. So, for hockey, I feel like the gateway to me watching more hockey is having more accessible options to watch hockey. And, if I'm already at Twitch, like at work, towards the end of the day when people are kind of leaving the office and I'm watching other people that I know on Twitch, like if I see that the end of bells is on, then I'll probably switch over and watch. Like it might just be something I watch just because it's there, and so
I think that's a good thing for sports like that. All right, let's talk about this. The MLB season winding down, we have the Yankees, Astros, Braves, and the Dodgers all have playoff spots clinched. You have it down here. The Twins, the A's, Cardinals, and the Nationals are in a good position to kind of clinch either division spots or the first wild card spots.
The A's and Nationals are pretty much in a couple games ahead for that first wild card spot in each league. Following them are the Tampa Bay Rays and the Milwaukee Brewers. So we talked about the Brewers. They lost Christian Yelich, but they've managed to get one game ahead of the Cubs. Three games ahead of the Cubs. The Rays are one game ahead of the Indians. The Rays thing is still kind of weird to me just because, we're talking about them potentially moving or splitting their season in between Tampa Bay and Montreal, and this is a playoff team at this point. So another team that has struggled with attendance significantly is the A's, and they're exceeding expectations again this year. They've got the 25th highest payroll in a team of 30, or sorry, in a league of 30 teams, and they're out here getting close to 100 wins again. So but when the playoffs come around, people generally show up. But I think the A's attendance situation will change when the Warriors leave town and the Raiders leave town, and the A's are just kind of the only game in town. Then I think that'll change a little bit.
I kind of tend to agree with that. I will say on my front, I think the Yankees have been looking really good, but the Braves, I think, are a team to contend with from what I've just looked at in the past couple of months. So I think it might come down somewhere between there. I haven't looked much at the teams that are going for those division spots or the wild card spots. And DJ M said Tigers are prime position for number one overall pick. So the process is working for them.
And also the Orioles, I've been kind of tracking them just because John Boyce has been tracking like just how bad their defense is. Or not their defense, but specifically their pitching. Like they've set a record for the number of home runs given up in a single season already. I don't think they'll get close to I actually had a hard time finding any records for like the total number of runs given up in a single season by a team. And I think that might just be because like in the really early days of baseball, they just gave up a shit ton of runs and didn't bother tracking them. So far the Orioles are up. This iteration of the Orioles is up there when it comes to at least
giving up
most runs. Likely to give up a home run.
For those not in the know, I live in Baltimore, but I am a New York Yankees fan. So I kind of get the firsthand experience of a good portion of what is a baseball town. And they kind of gave up a while ago, you know, like when you just know your season isn't going anywhere. But you kind of start out thinking it is. Yeah. Like they started out thinking they were going to have a pretty decent season. And pretty early on, I think they kind of saw the signs that they weren't. And kind of the town has just kind of written the season off. And all their hopes are right now on their football team, on the Baltimore Ravens. So on having a good season, which from the start out, it looks like they are. But it'll have to kind of just be wait and see, because we're pretty early on into the football season and not much has happened, but we do have some football news to talk about.
Yeah. I wanted to avoid as much, at least for the last couple of weeks, I wanted to avoid as much Antonio Brown talk as possible, but he has made that as impossible as any human being could possibly make that. Hopefully, we say this every single time. We didn't talk about him last week. He caught a touchdown. That was like the quietest thing that he's done. But now he's been cut from the Patriots a recent slew of sexual assault and misconduct accusations, which I think on their own, these things occurred when he was with the Steelers. So I think when something like that happens, it's usually, and the news comes out, I think teams are more likely to kind of wait and see, especially if you were a good player. And they'll kind of wait for the investigation to play out before, because they don't want to let accusations affect roster decisions. They kind of want it to be a little bit more set in stone. But in this case, Antonio Brown actually threatened one of the accusers, and then that accuser, you know, took screenshots and released all the texts, and so that's kind of what broke the straw that broke the camel's back. And so he was cut from the Patriots. He misses out on all of his guaranteed money. Basically, throughout this entire process, dating back all the way to what seems like so long ago with the helmet stuff and all of his shenanigans with the Raiders, he lost like $30 million guaranteed from them. He basically missed out on $15 million, or missed out on $9 million guaranteed with the Patriots. That could have been up to $15 million had he hit all of his incentives. He's basically, out of this whole thing, he's basically made like $100,000, which I know might seem like a lot to you and me, but for an NFL player that was set to make $30 million, that's a far cry from where we started. And this was over the course of maybe a month. I can't believe that all of this happened so quickly. But yeah, I mean, that's, if you're wondering how long it takes to torpedo your own NFL career, that's That's basically how long it takes. And that's with, you know, that's with him being one of the most talented, if not the most talented wide receiver in the NFL so that's with people, that's with teams trying to be as patient as possible with him. And he's managed to kind of not only burn every bridge, but, you know, blow it up behind him.
Yeah, it started out in like kind of a weird he said she said, and it just kind of continued to roll downhill. And I think, unfortunately, this won't be the last thing that we as football fandom hear about Antonio Brown, but it's probably going to be a very long while, at least until next season, before any teams think about touching, you know, Antonio Brown or any of his eccentricness at this point, because there's just a lot of stink on that.
I should clarify. I don't think it. I mean, yeah, you might be right about that timeline, but this morning he actually went on a Twitter rant and declared that he was retired. So, to go from, you know, him threatening to retire over his helmet thing, and then him actually retiring today over a completely different issue. It's been a wild circus, and yeah, hopefully after today, after this, I hope we can be done with him and be done with all this and never mention him again.
All right. So moving on from there, let's talk about some other stuff. Like Gardner, the man behind the plan in Jacksonville, is taken over for Nick Foles and has started to have kind of a breakout season. The rookie quarterback is doing good things down there in Jaguar. In I don't know why I called them Jaguar. For the Jaguars. In
Jaguar land.
In the Jaguar in land. Yeah, I think I was going to call it Jaguarville. But no, he's been playing really, really well in this kind of slew of young quarterbacks who are playing well, with like himself, the Ravens quarterback. Patrick Mahomes is still having an amazing run in his kind of first few years as a quarterback. And then we're going to possibly see what Daniel Jones can do, but we'll come to that later. So let's talk about the Jaguars quarterback.
Yeah. So he's actually, first of all, like you mentioned, Nick Foles was supposed to be the starter. So he, after having a couple really good seasons in Philadelphia as not just a reliable backup quarterback, but a guy who ended up having to be a starter for significant portions of the playoffs because Carson Wentz kept getting injured. Nick Foles finally got to go out on his own, signed a big contract, and with the Jaguars, who finally moved on from Blake Bortles. And then Foles got hurt early in the first game of the season. So that really sucks for him. In a way, he's kind of experiencing what the quarterbacks that he backed up went through. Now he has to watch a guy come in and take over and play really well in his absence. So Gardner Minshew is this, he's an interesting character. He was drafted in the sixth round. Nobody knew who this guy was. I think he was Alabama's third quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of had this weird Washington State, DJM says. He kind of had this weird thing about him for kind of being weird. And that's what kind of drew people to him. He has like this kind of big 80s porn star mustache. He looks like a dude from the 80s. He walks around in jean shorts, cut up tees, and like He just has this vibe about him. That,
the name
that,
Burt Reynolds is brought up a lot in this article.
Yes. Burt Reynolds, the bandanas DJM mentions. He's a slightly eccentric dude, but he seems so cool and humble. He's very well spoken, and he's relatively good at the position that he plays. I just don't think he's exceptional in any way.
Well, I mean, he is relatively good in the sense that he has, at least as far as for his first three games as a rookie, when you compare it to other people's first three games, he has the highest completion percentage ever.
Yeah.
And the highest passer rating at 110.6, which if you're at around 100, that's good. I think, yeah, 110 is like good. Actually, I would say like 110 is kind of around like Pro Bowl level. Maybe not MVP level, but that's like Pro Bowl level at this point. It's kind of hard to say because as the league gets more pass happy, the numbers kind of shift. But he's done incredibly well, and even as like a fantasy quarterback, he's done really well.
All right, guys. Yeah. So. Gonna throw it out there. Hot take time. What's up? Nick Foles comes back from injury. Who's Jacksonville starting? JVZ.
They are starting Minshew. You go with the young guy.
Yes.
I think it depends on how he plays in this next game. If in this next game today, he's still
actually
doing...
they already played their third game. It was on Thursday. So
Who did they play?
The Titans, and he threw two touchdowns in the first quarter.
See, I think his best showing was against the Chiefs, right? Because that's a team that I whose defense I can somewhat respect, and he played well there. The Titans, I don't. They're the Titans. So I think he still has earned the chance to keep playing. I don't think Nick Foles is bad. I think Nick Foles, like you said, also has a very exceptional quality about him for the situation that he was put into, which, like you said, was very similar to this situation that Minshew has been put into. And then I think it becomes a really hard choice for their front office to figure out what to do from there, because you have two really like kind of well-bred quarterbacks that look good just from their starting. And it just kind of maybe comes down to a defense that figures him out and how he deals with that.
I think he
keeps the starting position for now.
That can definitely happen, because in general, especially if this is an unplanned situation and Minshew did not go into camp as the starter, and he didn't spend all of training camp as the starter, and they didn't spend all this time designing plays for him. In general, if you're coming in as the backup, then they kind of limit the playbook to keep things simple and to keep things at a level where like it's not too much for him to learn too quickly. And you know, especially in his first year. So he's going to have like a limited, he's going to be working from a limited set of plays. So it can be a little bit easier for defense to figure out a guy like that. But I don't know. So my hot take is Nick Foles is the greatest backup quarterback of all time. So that's where he belongs as a backup. So you roll with Minshew, and then he gets injured just before the playoffs, and then Nick Foles will take you the rest of the way, because that's his role and that's the role he is destined to play.
Re-entering an era of your you know what? I'm going to save it till we get to Daniel Jones.
All right. Before we get to that, we mentioned the Dolphins last week about how bad they are. An update on how bad they are is that the NFL is investigating how bad they are.
Hold on. Can we start with the fact that their GM and I don't know if we mentioned this, their GM has been so overwhelmed and inundated with trade requests from within the organization that he had to ask people to use a pre-designed form for filling out for trade requests rather than just emailing him.
Yeah, it's the thing is, this might actually end up being the excuse they need, because like they're trying to argue, well, so the league is basically saying, hey, you are tanking right now and you are deliberately making your team bad so that you will lose games. That is bad. That is a bad look for the league. That is bad for everybody's revenue, and we all share revenue, so we can't have you do that. So that's what the competition committee is investigating, because the Dolphins have been very blatant about it. Usually when teams tank in the NFL, they're just bad and they can't help it.
But
the 0-16 Lions or the 0-16 Browns, like they were teams that tried to win games and just couldn't, and they were just that bad. But in this case, the Dolphins have been trading away a bunch of their good players, and you know, they've been talking about having a quote unquote plan, they've been pretty blatant about it. But if they can argue that, hey, we are like, we're trading these guys away because they're asking us to trade them because they don't want to be here, so we are just obliging their requests and we are getting rid of them, and so maybe that might end up being their saving grace here.
Yeah, I saw that story. I think somebody posted that one for us. But it's a level of ridiculousness and confusion that I think some of it is definitely a smokescreen, because I'm sure they knew that these investigations were going to happen, but it is hashtag pray for Josh Rosen. It is just a level of ridiculousness that I expect to see this in basketball. I expect to see this in other places, but it's like in the NFL, it's so hard to get away with what they're trying to get away with. And if they do, more power to the Dolphins. I'm going to buy a Dolphin jersey if they get away with this.
Oh, don't support that. I can't condone that.
I can't.
I don't think Dolphins fans would condone that.
Look, if you end up, if they come out of the end of this with all of the picks and like can just build a team from hopes and dreams, I'm all about it, man. I am all about it.
Okay. They do have 3 first round picks from all these guys that they've traded away. So
So DJM just said they have 3 first round picks coming up in 2020, and they have 2 in 2021. So those other 2 are first round picks as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I mean they'll also have the normal assortment of the first pick in every round this year because they will, because they're going to be that bad.
Oh man, it's so good. I mean, look, maybe the Dolphins can turn it around by signing Eli Manning if the Giants release him, because they decided to let Daniel Jones be their starter over for the New York Giants.
Yeah, so Eli Manning has not had a great start to the season. Daniel Jones had a pretty good preseason.
Kaz. I will let you, if you want to take a good 60 seconds or so to give your thoughts on Eli Manning, as now he has been moved out of his position as QB1 in favor of Daniel Jones. So if you want to give your thoughts on the history of Eli Manning as Giants quarterback, go ahead.
I feel like I kind of did that when we talked about the Giants signing Daniel Jones on the show, and I talked about Eli kind of struggling in the last couple years, and then I think he just mostly, I think this season has been a little bit of bad luck for Eli coming into it. One of the people who was supposed to be a premier wideout for them in Golden Tate is on a 4-game suspension. I think he still has 2 games left after tonight, maybe. So that hurts. And then they kind of got plagued by injury a little bit. Two of their other good wideout, Sterling Shepard and another guy, were out with concussion protocols last week. And one of them is still out. So they've kind of had to dig down into the barrels for their wide receiving core. And I just I think a little bit is Eli is starting to look old, too. He just doesn't have that spry young step. But this does lead me to a position thought of the possibility of entering an era of the playoff quarterback very specifically and doing something like letting Daniel Jones run the season and then putting Eli in for the games that during the playoffs and seeing how that goes, maybe. But I don't think we're ever going to get there.
Yes. What if Daniel Jones is basically coming out of here looking like Baker Mayfield last year and is just like, yeah, he's got it under control?
Oh, no. I fully expect him to have a somewhat decent showing. I don't think he's going to be a Gardner Minshew, but I think he's going to be okay. I think he's definitely going to do better than Eli has done in these first 2 or 3 games.
I mean, it's funny that you mention the playoff quarterback thing. I mean, yeah, we mentioned it with Nick Foles, but I think one of the most recent examples of a playoff quarterback besides Nick Foles was when Brock Osweiler took the Denver Broncos to the playoffs, and then they swapped him out for Eli's brother, Peyton Manning, who then kind of stumbled his way all the way and rode an excellent defense into winning the Super Bowl to get his second Super Bowl win, and then promptly retired after that. And you know, that was a Peyton Manning who basically could not turn his neck at that point in his career. so like Eli's in better shape than that. He's actually been pretty durable throughout his career. This 538 article is interesting because it kind of helped dispel the notion of playoff Eli Manning, because I mean, we obviously think of the two amazing Super Bowl runs that he had, but basically all the other playoff games that he had, which I think were 4 other playoff games, they were terrible. So, but we remember the good ones. So,
yeah.
So when we say a couple things, like we said 2 weeks ago, that playoff Eli Manning was our only hope in the Patriots not winning the Super Bowl this year, we were wrong. There is no hope. It basically is the conclusion that I've come to now after reading this article. Playoff Eli Manning is not going to save us. Any iteration of Eli Manning is not going to save us at this point.
His clone might, guys. His clone might.
I don't know. I it's still wait and see for me. I'm going to kind of pay attention to these games in a little bit and kind of see what is happening. But yeah, I think at this point, this is going to close a chapter on Eli, unless he decides to be like his brother and just keep trying to get onto any and every team that'll take him. Maybe he'll just pull a what is his name? Dallas's previous quarterback, and then just go to a desk and have a great desk commentary, which I don't think he would have.
He does not have the personality that Tony Romo has. but one thing I will say about Daniel Jones is that I know he's probably playing up against second stringers, but he played well enough in the preseason that a lot of the people that were making fun of the Giants for picking him were very publicly walking back their hot takes and admitting that they were wrong about Daniel Jones. Yeah. So
see,
that's you know, that's kind of one of those, like, you know, maybe you don't play the draft game and try to, you know, maximize the value at every pick. Maybe if this is your guy, you just go get your guy. And so hopefully the Giants were right about Daniel Jones. And
because you're always, no matter what, right, with the experience that we have and the history that is before us and the fucking Death Star that is Tom Brady, and Tom Brady was not picked in the first round. You always got to be like, just this. That's all you got to say is Tom Brady. You never know.
Yeah, you know who else was picked in the sixth round like Tom Brady? Gardner Minshew.
All right. Let's go on to one of my favorite topics: competitive gaming. So there's kind of been a slew of things going on with some competitive gaming stuff. We very recently had the major in Counter-Strike, which went to the team that has been dominating Counter-Strike for the past couple of years in Astralis. But this is a, I want to call it a consortium because I don't really know what else to call it, but Sean Combs, P. Diddy, Daniel Parnell, one of the Twitch co-founders, and a bunch of other people are investing $96 million in a startup called Play Versus.
Yeah, and this is geared towards helping make competitive gaming a recognized high school sport. They're basically investing in schools and trying to get this whole just convincing them that gaming is a positive activity in the same sense that along the same lines as other sports, making this like a legitimate extracurricular activity. That's the word I'm looking for.
This and then our next story hit me very weirdly in two different ways. This hits me in something else we brought up a while ago when we were talking about where all the money in esports is and comes from. And we talked about how a lot of it is like this. It comes from either group or private investments that are literally funding and propping up these things because there is no turnout for a lot of this in esports. And I think, unfortunately, what is going to continue to happen is as these people who are willing to throw millions of dollars at this because they think it'll have a 10 or 20 year investment, but you're literally going to build it on the backs of the kids who are not going to earn anything in those 10 to 20 years, or not earn a lot in those 10 or 20 years, is it's going to convince other adults and other people who aren't as well-versed in these things, because people are only going to look at it at one or two things: video games are bad, or, oh, look at all this money. They're never gonna understand it. They're never gonna look at the middle. They're just gonna have those two drastic opinions of they're either gonna start at, oh, video games are bad, or video games are okay, and then go to, oh, look at all this money. And that is still not helping anything for me. I think in a sense, it helps legitimize gaming maybe a little bit more, but I don't think we need that. I don't think we need the legitimization because I think we're already there. I think it's on building out the profitability of esports is where we need to be heading towards. I don't think we need to keep doing these big investment platforms that in the end don't really account for or mean a lot.
Well, so in the context of this story, that $17 million has been raised in order to make a new, I guess what they're calling a network. The Video Game Entertainment and News Network, DENN. And so in a way, they're kind of trying to replicate the old style of sports media. They're basically trying to make an ESPN for esports. And it raises some interesting questions. And Sunbun, who brought us this story,
kind of asked the question. I have something as a bit of a response to Sunbun, and then I have something to say about this.
So he asks, in our area, in our current era of streaming and other bullshit, like, is this kind of a regression that, we're basically making an old, we're making a network. So, like, are we going backwards by doing this, by trying to replicate what used to be, what still is for traditional sports and, So what's your take, DJ?
My answer to Sunbun and anyone out there that might be listening to this, that is a valid point that we have streaming now. But in general, my answer would be, this is not for you. If you already know about streaming and Twitch and getting your opportunity to watch the competitive gaming that you want, this is not for you. This is for someone who doesn't know about these things. This is, to use a WWE analogy, this is for the casual fan. This is not for someone who's already dialed in. Also, I think when I see Video Game Entertainment and News Network, it kind of reminds me of what the early, early, early days of G4 TV was supposed to be. They had video game content, but they also had news content, and they had a little bit of TV friendly professional polish, but not too much. I don't see
that
as a bad thing.
Like X Play.
No, before name, right? I'm saying pre Tech TV merger. Talking like G4TV.com, Pulse, Cheat.
Got it.
In the early, early, early days of G4, that is what they're essentially looking for, from what it sounds like. Honestly, I don't think that's a bad thing in that case when it comes to covering competitive gaming, covering news in gaming. I think that, in theory, this isn't a terrible idea of giving this medium a network that is really for everyone else.
So part of that thing, and I don't know if I mentioned it on the show to you guys, but there was this kind of big thing talked about a while ago where in doing a lot of this investment and building out of these things, and I think we've talked about it with other things. We talked about it with the AAF and stuff, and how a lot of their downfall in trying to build an NFL competitor was this person who just wanted part of the platform, but not the whole thing, in their betting thing that they were building. A lot of this, kind of from what I read, because I've read a lot of into this, seems like what they want is to build out these TV studios that, you know, we'll have some of those TV shows that are remnant of things of the old to kind of pull at nostalgia while also playing into the current level of platform that exists, while then also slowly but surely building out their own platform, right? So if you build a platform that, one, is already going to like feed into the era that we are in, while also building towards the future. So you build something that everybody's used to. You build a TV studio, cameras, all that stuff. You use Twitch, you use YouTube, you use all these other platforms that exist. You talk about all the games that are going to be there. You then also start to get the rights to stream these things You get the rights to stream a fighting game. You host a fighting game tournament. You host a Madden tournament, and you become synonymous with this. And then at some point, you start to build out, which it says they will be using streaming platforms and other things. But there is definitely going to be an era where they then go, well, now we have our own network. And like you said, with like kind of almost the wrestling analogy, wrestling is still on TV, but you now have the WWE Network, and you have all these other streaming platforms that wrestling is starting to build a brand on, to bring people into just the brand. And I think that is part of what this is going to be, is to build a brand that they can then bring people into, right? So you have all these kids who are going to be in these high schools in this program that will then be on this network. And it's all in to build a brand, just to then bring money back to these people who invested in it. It's not necessarily to bring anything better to gaming or to esports. Like, that's not what they care about. It's just the return on investment.
It's not so much a return on investment as much as it is the need for content. There is always content that is needed, and there's always airtime to fill. And
yeah, I
think this is a good market for a television network to build upon.
It is. I just want it to be, I want it to be treated with some respect and not like a circus. And these names that are attached to this don't. And it's in my head, I'm starting to sound like a 30-year-old skateboarder who's talking about Nike and Nike being the death of skateboarding. And I feel like I'm starting to talk about like Twitch and all these other brands being the death of gaming, because they're not really gaming. I think it's just how you kind of play the system. You need the people who have the money, and we do, but I don't know. I don't want to come at odds to it in that realm that skateboarders have come at odds with skateboarding and the big brands. Like, I don't want us to get there. I feel like we have a good pace with gamers and the people who have money. I don't want it to just become some shell of a thing that I no longer enjoy, because these people are just soul sucking all the money out of it and making all the gamers feel sad for wanting to be professionals.
I see this as an opportunity for competitive gaming and competitive gamers, the players, to have more eyes on them. And at the end of the day, that's what we all want. We want these people to have more eyes on them and to get more respect and more fame.
So it sounds like, Kaz, you are scared that this is going to be kind of a bubble. And then since these people are kind of just investors, or like we see them as just investors. So when they don't see the potential in it anymore, they're just going to yank their money and go. And then the people that are left are going to be the gamers, the people that are actively trying to build this and turn this into something more solid, and just the venture capital people are just going to be the ones that that leave everybody in a lurch, just like what happened with the AAF. I think that's a fair concern.
Yeah, because I make a lot of that comparison, because a lot of it did happen with like skateboarding, where like all these big brands came in, Nike and all these brands, and you know, had all these skateboarding teams and all this stuff, and we're doing all this travel, and then that return on investment wasn't as much as it used to be, and you started to get less and less of that support that you had, and these guys weren't getting these $1 million contracts to go out and make skateboarding videos anymore. And then it circled back around to guys just doing it with their phones on Instagram and on Twitter, rather than having these big theatrical style like tapes that the 90s got famous for in skateboarding. And it kind of was a bubble. It survived better than most things did, and I think gaming would too. But I just don't want it to see it go down that route. Like,
how would you ideally see this television network going, Cass?
Obviously, you need these people because they have the money. But I would love to see it in a realm where they then trust the gaming style people that they hire. And rather than doing these like silly dog and pony show things, like really, really feed into what we want, right? Just like make a show that's about updating us on certain games. Do competitive gaming tournaments that are easier to watch, easier to stream, easier to find out about, easier to have news about when they're happening. And do more physical events in locations rather than just feeding into the online shit. Because that's a big thing that we're missing the support of, is the physical events. Those are kind of starting to trickle away. Like, we're not getting as many physical events that aren't about, you know, millions of dollars. we don't just have these, like, fighting games still do, but, like, other competitive game things don't have these, like, small homegrown tournaments that you find the next great, you know, the next great, like, competitor at. It's like, if this guy isn't streaming on Twitch, then you don't know about him.
So I agree with all of that. Just to clarify a few things, they're not going to be a traditional TV network. The closest thing they'll get to traditional TV is broadcasting on Pluto and YouTube TV and Sling TV, which are kind of the old skinny bundle type of, like, here, take your cable package and stick it online type of services. They are going to be strictly online. So it does seem kind of weird. Like, where are they going to fit in? They're not gonna.
One last thing I think we can move on is that it sounds like what this network is trying to do is that it is going to try and consolidate all of competitive gaming into one place, almost in the same way that you've got like NFL Red Zone or NFL Sunday Ticket, where you can watch all of the games, as much of them as you want. What this network sounds like is, if you want to watch a Counter-Strike tournament, you can go here. If you want to watch a League of Legends tournament, you can go here. If you want to watch a weekend of fighting games, you can go here. It sounds like they want to be the catch-all network for all of the major competitive games.
Yeah, like a showcase. And I do think ESPN is still kind of the best comparison. ESPN calls themselves the most trusted name in news, or the most trusted name in sports, and in a way they kind of still are, because they're still kind of this big behemoth compared to all the other sports networks and not just networks but news sources, they're still kind of the central, or maybe the first go-to place you think of when you think of sports news. So I think the Video Game Entertainment and News Network wants to be kind of that first source.
They also need a better name.
Well, sure. But, now when we get competitive gaming news, we kind of get it just kind of in pieces from a variety of different sites, and there's kind of no one central place. There's like a couple that I keep in my mind that are potentially go-to sources, but none that are kind of this big overarching behemoth. So I think they want to do that. They want to be this showcase, so maybe if somebody stumbles there, they can get introduced to a variety of different esports. So yeah, I mean, I think a variety network is kind of the best way to sum this up, and I think that's where they stand. That's where they will fit in. Hopefully, some of the things, like they're starting off with building two separate studios, that kind of scares me and makes me think that this is kind of bubble-ish. Maybe why not just start with one and then expand? I'm kind of nitpicking there. We'll see what happens with all this money that they've got and what they can make out of it. And hopefully this ends up being something that benefits the gaming community in the long run.
All right. Let's talk about the NBA's new crackdown on tampering.
Yeah. So we've talked about tampering in the past. mostly centered around LeBron, and we mostly talk about it in the context of like, what are you going to do? Because you can't really prove anything. Not everybody is as dumb as Magic Johnson, and going on talk shows and talking about all these players that you want to sign. It's not always that obvious. And so it's almost like, what can they possibly do about this? But that hasn't stopped the NBA and the Board of Governors from ramping up the penalties for tampering. And
So this comes from a Ringer article, and let's kind of go through these. So with unanimous approval from league owners for increased regulations, and some of those will be drastically increased fines for tampering and unauthorized agreements. So now that can be up to $10 million
fine. Yeah, and that's to the team.
Okay.
Not to the players. So, I mean, that's a good question, because to a team, that's kind of insignificant. So the fines are kind of just, if anything, they just exist just to document these infractions. It's like when players get fined $5,000 for flopping, that's it's like that. That's nothing to them.
One of the other ones is seizure of draft picks or invalidation of contracts.
Yeah, so that's the big penalty. And I think, there's precedence for doing some of this in the past, but for like really egregious stuff, for like trying to circumvent the salary cap, and things like that. But I think they're going to try to apply this to tampering situations instead of just that. And so if you're wondering like, okay, how are they going to actually catch people tampering? Because now it's hard enough to do that. And so they're going to do that by having audits, random audits of five different teams a year. And so these teams are required now to save communications with agents for up to a year. And potentially, I think the league has always had this power, but they kind of reemphasized that they have this power to warn everybody that this is a possibility. But if they want to, the league office can seize communications devices, people's phones, and all that to monitor their communications. And this will be for team tampering and player-to-player tampering as well. So this is where this starts to get a little bit more like, I don't know how whether they're ever going to try to do this, or B, like whether they have, I mean, legally, like I don't know this will stand up in court, and then B, like I don't know if anybody is going to have the stomach to actually do this. Like, are you going to actually tell LeBron like, hey, I want your phone right now, and then I'm going to go through your phone and check and see whether you're talking with Anthony Davis or not. I think
you can find people who would be willing to do that. I don't think that would be a hard thing, right? Because there are people out there who, outside of who the person is, want the league to be this. They more care about what the league is and what it represents. And if they feel like these people are hurting the image of that, then I feel like there are people who are definitely willing to take that evil eye from the fandom of those individuals. And be like, oh, that I can't. Of course he takes LeBron's phone and checks it. You don't see him taking fucking Kemba Walker's phone and checking it. Like, you know, like I definitely feel like there's somebody out there who would definitely just be like, no, I'm here for that.
Yeah, that kind of internal investigations arm. The other interesting thing that this brings up is like, There's like a lot of things that are against the rules, but there's also very structured ways of investigating those things. And so this, in a way, this thing about confiscating devices, it kind of makes an end around to all that, because it's like, okay, what if they take devices while they're looking for tampering and they find evidence of something else? And does that violate the procedures that the NFL, that the NBA already has in place for investigating those other things? So it raises those kinds of questions as well, but maybe it doesn't end up becoming an issue until the first time they actually take somebody's device and find something that they didn't expect to find, you know, like evidence of steroid use or something.
See, I was going to say, like, I was going to say this, but then I solved that problem in my own head, which I was going to be like, well, you know, you give people devices that they're only supposed to use for work, but then you're like, well, people then buy, you know, a multitude of personal devices, and then you have to search their personal device, and, like, you know, it just becomes a thing, and, like,
yeah, you know, they end up with more phones. Rules. You know, yeah. Kevin Durant's got burner phones, and like, he's not the only one. He's not the only person arguing with people on Twitter using fake accounts.
You got to go through of Kevin Durant's 7 fucking phones to see if he's tampering.
Like, half these people are cheating on their spouses, so it's like they got burner phones for that, and it's. You're not going to be able to find all these devices.
Do you have to go through the device of everybody in their entourage too?
Yeah. See, that's the other thing. Like, you can just tell somebody else to do that. Like, there's so it's so hard to actually investigate all this stuff that, like, if you're actually getting caught, man, then you're actually just being careless. And
yeah.
So, like, you know, another story came out this week that was kind of detailing, like, how the Clippers got Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And, you know, and that's a situation where you could say, like, Kawhi Leonard totally tampered. Like, Kawhi Leonard himself was a free agent, but he tampered with Paul George and got him to demand a trade, and, you know, basically took down a, you know, through his actions, Kawhi Leonard turned a Western Conference playoff team into a, you know, into a rebuilding team. And, you know, and that's not something like that's something where you could look at it and say, yeah, that probably happened, but I don't think you're going to be able to find proof of any of that. And for Kawhi Leonard himself, like, the Clippers were saying that, like, they were sending people to go watch his games in Toronto, and, like, Steve Ballmer himself would go and watch games in Toronto, which is totally not illegal. It's not against any rules for the owner of one team to go watch another team. But they were just doing that to just plant this idea in Kawhi Leonard's head that, like, hey, we are the LA Clippers. You recognize us and we want you and we're here to watch you. But, you know, like, there's so many things you could do to tamper with a person that aren't necessarily against the rules. And it's just, there's such a wide variety of things. Like, how are you going to police all of this? I don't know whether this is going to end up solving what they hope it's going to solve. And maybe a half measure is better than nothing. But it'll be interesting to see how all these rules end up, like, this. This is going to end up turning into a task force, like DJM is saying, like, this is going to end up being like a whole big department just to try to enforce all of this. And I don't know how much it's going to help. I mean, they have the money to pay for all of this. It's just, I'm not sure what's going to come out of this, or maybe they can fold it into whatever division they use to set up, however they choose to handle gambling and all the internal audits required to make sure that's all above board. And so maybe this whole internal investigations group ends up being a big giant department within the NBA. And maybe that's the right way to do things. But I don't think you're going to be able to, you know, like when LeBron James of the LA Lakers has dinner with Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans in All-Star Weekend, like, you're not going to be able to stop that. Like, that's, and you can't say, like, hey, you can't have dinner with your friends. Like, that's, that's like far too draconian. So like, I don't think there's anything they can do. It's hopeless. That's my hot take.
Have a member of the task force at dinner with them at all times, and if they talk about basketball, they must ask for the check and leave in separate cars.
Yeah, like it's like you're going to build out the CIA at this point, like within the NBA. That's the level of effort this is going to take.
And if it's what you have to do to keep the game clean, where can I sign up?
They're going to have sting operations that like people are going to try to entrap people into tampering just to make sure you're not tampering.
What's the name of the dude from To Catch a Predator? Who just
Chris Hansen?
Yeah, fucking. Hey, LeBron, why don't you go ahead and sit down over there? So you came to meet a Anthony Davis, huh? Okay. How do you know Anthony? we have some documents here that you've been texting with Anthony about basketball and basketball related things. Does that sound familiar?
This could end up being great content for NBA TV, though, if that's the way this turns out.
All right, let's move on to somebody making history in a situation that I didn't think you needed to do that. So swimmer Sarah Thomas makes history by swimming the English Channel four times consecutively. In I think a total of like 48 or 54 hours.
Yeah.
130 miles.
It's actually only 80 or it's 20 miles across. So yeah, she's going to do four times. So that's supposed to be 80 miles, but they have tides and stuff. So like if you look at this BBC article there, it kind of shows like all the weird curves that,
yeah, she took that a come with all the currents. Like, yeah, she ended up taking like a lot of weird routes on her trips back and forth. And yeah, so she swam for 54 hours straight. Yeah. At 37 years old, mind you.
37 years old, cancer survivor. So.
Yeah. And is a American swimmer from Colorado. And yeah, so this is like literally history happening. I first saw this story, I just like literally was like, I saw it say it was like, oh, this person swam the English Channel four times. And then I started seeing the stories of like four times consecutively. And I was like, why? And I had to look at it because I never knew, one, how far that was. And like you said, it's 20 miles. And then to think about the back and forth and just like, it's astounding. It's
while the waves are crashing into you. She got stung by a jellyfish.
Yeah.
And
having this one through the nights.
Like, yeah. I mean, she started Sunday morning and ended on Tuesday morning. It's 54 hours Yeah, like she couldn't get out of the water at any point. In order to feed her, they like tied protein recovery drinks and they mixed in a little bit of caffeine so she could stay awake. They would tie that to a rope and then throw that out to her, and then she would drink that while she was swimming, and this story kind of taught me the logistics of what they do for really long distance swims like this, because previously people had done this particular swim three times across the channel. Thomas is the first one to do four times. She also holds the record, the previous record now of the longest continuous unassisted current neutral swim along a natural route in open water by, swimming 104.6 miles in Lake Champlain. I think this 130 mile swim beats that record. I think the previous longest ocean swim was 77.3 miles, so this definitely beats that. It's so this is you know, not only is this just an amazing accomplishment in general, I think this breaks a lot of world records. And I mean, just the thought of, like, I can't even if I was just sitting down, like, I could not stay awake for 54 hours.
Yeah.
And so just that on its own is an amazing accomplishment. To be continuously swimming the entire time is an amazing accomplishment. To not drown is an amazing accomplishment. You know, like, if I get in the water and I get stung by a jellyfish, I'm done. I'm done for the day. That's it. Like, that's I couldn't even power through that, but she managed to power through that. You know, and all this
pushing off course, dealing with, like, the salt water, because that's salt water.
Oh yeah, that's not... yeah. That's the other thing she mentioned is that was really hard. Was that, like, you're just, you know, that salt water, it just hurts your throat, your mouth, and you're worried about breathing and all this, and yeah, and you know, and then managing to stay, you know, to keep your nutrition up the entire time, so that your body doesn't just give up on you and then you drown. I mean, obviously there's, like, a boat there, like, ready to help save you, but it's still, like, 130 miles of swimming, 54 hours, just all these numbers just sound completely insane to me. So this is an amazing accomplishment, all done by somebody who is a cancer survivor. So, like, yeah, just amazing accomplishment on top of amazing accomplishment. So now that she's done with that, she's gonna go take a big long nap, or probably sleep for 54 hours. That's what I would do after that.
Yeah, that's because that's just, I don't know, that's just crazy. That's not something I can even fathom. But yeah, that's we won't be here for 54 hours. You've only had to listen to this for about an hour. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. If you would like to support the show, you could do so in a plethora of ways. You could tell people about the show, or if you would like to support us with monetary value, you can go over to patreon.com/sportsoddsandends and support us at any tier that you would like. It is kind of more of like a tip jar than anything else. You don't have to do it, but we are grateful if you choose to do so. You can also check out all the links to all the stories over at sportsoddsandends.com. You can follow us all on Twitter. I am at King Kaz. JVZ is at JVZ. DJM is at Call Me DJM. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, keep gaming.